Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:19, and that is Pacific Summer Time, and today is Monday, July 25th. And it was a reasonably quiet day on stock markets today, where the real standouts were one in India, where the market was led higher by the banking sector, and that is reasserting its rebound, which has been present now for the last few months. And that's also sort of indicative of the fact that India is reasonably well insulated from the global economy because the domestic economy has got such a large weighting. But it's also in view of the fact that governance is improving there, and India is reaping the benefits of the fact that the oil price has rolled over. And that's the other big news item in here today, is that the oil price was down an additional dollar. So now it is breaking below the 200-day moving average, and that really withdraws any semblance that this is still a consistent uptrend from the January low. The price has broken the progression of higher reaction lows. This is already a larger reaction that has been the case for over 2 weeks, and now it is breaking below the 200-day moving average. And that is part of the reason that the S&P 500 was in mildly negative territory today. It was down about 0.33%, and the leading decliners on the index were energy related. Energy is a large cap sector, so it has acted as a tailwind for much of the last 6 months. And with oil prices now rolling over, I think equity investors are going to start to begin to get the message, and some of the very impressive gains that we've seen in the energy sector are quite likely to be unwound. At least short-term overbought conditions in some of those energy shares are likely to be unwound in the short term. If energy prices, and particularly oil, continue to pull back, and oil has been led lower by heating oil and gasoline, and that is also, you know, when we not just look at it on the short term but on the medium term, that's very much falling into line with what we might expect following a very large rebound from a very deep oversold condition. Then the having had that overextension relative to the MA unwound, the very logical question is, so what's next? And of course, the what's next answer is that a lot of that marginal production that was put under extreme pressure when prices were trading in the $20 region, or below $30, so the low was around 28, then they are much more economic when prices were closer to 50, and when you could hedge future production well above $50. And with that kind of cushion, then the potential for prices to come back down and to find an equilibrium point where we really get an idea of what exactly is the low point in oil prices. This is where we actually get confirmation of where the oil prices are going to eventually start to begin to find support on a more sustained level. So we can anticipate a great deal of volatility and potentially prolonged ranging, which would be the right-hand extension following the type 2 bottom that we've had. And of course, that was the massive reaction against the prevailing trend, which is the defining characteristic of a type 2 bottom. So then that's likely to be a pivotal effect, because we've had a sustained move in equity prices. We've had a period of time over the last 3 weeks where the S&P 500 broke out, where the Dow Jones broke out, where the Nasdaq has returned to a semblance of demand dominance. But we haven't seen that yet in the transports. We haven't seen that yet in the banking sector. And we do have short-term overbought conditions in both the Dow and the S&P. So there is the potential for at least some consolidation in the region of the upper side of the range for those indices. And with some of the impetus being taken out of this, just a rally where we had an advance on consecutive days, we're certainly not getting the advance on consecutive days any longer. And some of the shares that had done particularly well, not least Amazon, Amazon has really paused now over the last couple of weeks, and the potential for an additional consolidation is looking quite likely. it is interesting that among the leading sectors in here today were the retailers, and but they are coming off of really quite deep oversold conditions. So that really is the outperformance of a sector that had been blasted over the last 6 months. And then they are more in a position where they're unwinding overextensions on the downside relative to the MA rather than pushing new highs. So that it would appear that we're getting at least some rotation in the wider stock market. But it is also worth highlighting that there are a number of those high technology companies like Microsoft and Facebook, which, and indeed Cisco Systems, which have been pushing new highs, and in the case of Cisco, that's pushing on to a new 8-year high, and we're not that far away from it actually completing what has been a more than decade-long base formation. Just because energy prices are pulling back, it doesn't mean that there aren't additional bullish characteristics in the wider stock market. So then we would really need to see clear downward dynamics to question that this breakout isn't going to hold. But despite the fact that in the very short term, there is some potential for at least some consolidation. In the precious metal markets, silver was as low today as 1935 and retraced almost the entire decline, and really only finished down 7 cents. This so far has been an orderly consolidation in silver and in gold, which was down about $6 in here today. And there's still the potential that we get a somewhat swifter process of mean reversion, but so far it has been very orderly. The prices have been pulling back rather mildly, and that has allowed the moving average to at least partially catch up with the price action, so that the overextension is being closed in here, but it hasn't closed quite yet. So we might be in for some additional consolidation, but considering just how moderate so far the pullbacks have been relative to the previous advance, this continues to look like a medium-term recovery situation, and that any additional weakness could be viewed as a buying opportunity, considering that they are the precious metals represent one of the only asset classes that is still comparatively cheap, particularly relative to its peak values. And we're seeing that some of the overbought condition is now also being unwound in the precious metal miners. They had done spectacularly well because they've been able, for the first time in a decade, to offer upside leverage. But of course, with energy prices pulling back and with commodity prices generally under pressure, and despite the fact that it has been a modest pullback so far in the precious metals, they are rather standing out as a sector that is deeply overbought. So there is the potential for some of those really fantastic gains to be consolidated in the precious metal miners. But of course, when we do get evidence that the metal prices are firming up again, then there's a strong likelihood that those mining companies are going to take off once more, because as I said, they do offer upside leverage and indeed downside leverage to the precious metal prices. And in the bond markets today, we're continuing to see that the overbought conditions are being unwound in US treasuries, but German bunds continue to firm again. Now, there was news last week that the ECB is pretty much running out of bonds to buy because of the self-imposed limits that it's imposed on itself relative to how many bonds or how much of an outstanding issue it can own. And of course, there's a very simple solution to that problem, and that is that they either change or remove the limits. But as it stands, they're buying bunds with just hand over fist, because they represent the least risky investment that they can make. But of course, it isn't Germany needs the money. What we really need to see is some sort of, concerted solution for the banking sector, and not just in one country, but because of the intertwining of the financial sector following the creation of the euro, the German banks. They're as much on the hook for non-performing loans in Spain and Italy as the Italian and Spanish banks are. So we really do need a concerted effort to put this behind us, but that is going to require write-downs. And there doesn't seem, at least, to be any evidence that there's appetite for that in Europe just yet. What we have seen is that the solution so far has been to nationalize banks, which is really to brush the problem under the carpet, for the simple reason that once a bank has been nationalized, then there is no requirement for earnings reports or for stress tests. So then you just don't hear about them anymore. That doesn't mean that the problem has necessarily gone away. It has just been taken on to the sovereign level. And Germany is a perfect example of that. All of the Landesbanks have been nationalized. Deutsche Postbank, which is a significant lender in addition to being the post office, was nationalized, or delisted at least, in December. So that there are actually only two banks listed in all of Germany, which is by far the largest economy within the Eurozone, which really does help to highlight just how acute the financial crisis is, and the commonality that you have in the shares of Deutsche and Commerzbank, which represent really quite small weightings in the Eurostoxx Banks Index, but the commonality that you have in their performance and the continued downtrends that you see in the banking sector in Europe is perhaps a good explanation for why we haven't had a more impressive rally out of Europe. It's been our contention for quite some time that the UK's decision to exit the EU is much more of an issue for the Eurozone than it is for the UK, and that remains very much the case. What it also means, though, is that, you know, if you look at, for example, a share like Bayer, which has been trending lower for more than a year. It has a P of about 12 and yields about 3%, but it's still in a downtrend, and that's despite the fact that it has a fair chance of successfully acquiring Monsanto, which would set it up as a major agribusiness, an even larger agribusiness company. And yet it's still trending downwards, and one has to question whether that is anything to do in particular with Bayer's business plan, or whether it is more to do with just the wider environment that we have within the Eurozone. So regardless of what happens with the Eurozone, then a company like Bayer is still going to be around, and I suspect that it is a similar type of story for a large number of companies in the Eurozone generally, that it is really a question on the minds of many investors as to what currency the shares of those companies are going to be denominated in 5 years from now, but the businesses themselves are likely to remain intact, and likely to continue to represent value, and not least because they've been going down for so long. So then what Europe needs is a catalyst. And so far that has been pretty slow in coming, not least because negative interest rates are inherently deflationary. And then how long is it going to take the ECB to figure that out? How long is it going to take the Bank of Japan to figure that out? What are they going to do when they have figured it out is perhaps the biggest question of all, but it perhaps means that we're getting a little bit closer to some form of helicopter money, which would be inherently inflationary rather than deflationary, and after all, it is inflation what they're looking for. So then it's a similar story with Japan. Now, of course, the dollar had an upside key reversal against the yen just 3 days ago, and the progression of lower rally highs is still intact. It was the yen had the upside key reversal, and the yen continues to trend higher with this progression of higher reaction lows against the dollar. The dollar has these lower rally highs, and the Nikkei also has a progression of lower rally highs. So this inverse relationship between the strength of the yen and the weakness of the current of the stock market remains intact. The Nikkei really does have to sustain a move above 17,000 to break that progression of lower rally highs. And it's a very similar story for the DAX or the CAC, where you still have these progressions of lower rally highs. And indeed, if you redenominate the FTSE 100 into euro, then it has a similar chart compared to the DAX. And it, therefore, it is the relative weakness of the pound that has helped to propel it higher. That might not necessarily be the case for some of these smaller cap or mid or smaller cap indices, and the AIM 100 today pushed on to a new recovery high. It's I think the highest level it's traded at in 2 years, and there are a number of those smaller UK companies are rather well positioned to benefit from the competitive advantage that they are being afforded by the devaluation of the pound, not least as they try to compete not just on a European basis but on a global basis. And I think with that I will leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.